far are you going?
About 30 years.
In this week's episode, we go to the anti-movies with our review of The Giver, with special guest Sean Ryan. Here, Dustin, you idiot. All right, welcome to the Anime of Yesteryear podcast, or maybe Alpha Counter, perhaps. My name is Zionic, or Dustin, and you know me and my co-host, John.
I'm John, and we're back after 2 or 3 months off.
It's been like 2 months, because we did the Wind Rises recording in November, and then you had your surgery, and then...
And then we put up an episode that was from like 8 months ago.
6 months. It's not that bad.
Please tell me they gave you the good stuff for the painkillers, sir.
Well, not really. I have ibuprofen, but that's not so special.
Oh, damn.
Well, it's the fact that I've had a... We talked about summer anime shows back in July, and I've had this recording on my hard drive for 6 months, because I was like, I'll find a use for it eventually. And then with him being out of commission for a little bit, I was like, well, I got some stuff that I can use. So I was like, all right, I'll just go ahead and work on this. So it's like an almost 3-hour podcast.
Sometimes it is quantity over quality.
Yeah.
Especially when you missed it for a while.
I need to introduce you. So our special guest today is Sean Ryan from Alpha Counter, who I run promos for quite a lot whenever I get the chance.
Much appreciated, Dustin. Glad to be on here.
Oh, no problem. Yeah, this is going to make up for when we had you on to talk about Bubblegum Crisis 3 years ago. So there's none of this headphone troubleshooting issues. All right. It is also our American right to talk about a movie that, it's The Giver from 1991, the live-action adaptation that apparently I think it was trying to cash in on the Ninja Turtles hype, because this felt like a really low-budget Ninja Turtles movie.
They even mentioned the Ninja Turtles at one point in this.
Yeah, it's even a joke in this. So.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
I think it's because the same company made both of them.
Well, it seemed to me that like even just the early to mid-90s was this weird kind of era where, yeah, we were still coming off the Ninja Turtles movie when it came to dudes doing karate and rubber suits, but you had a whole bunch of properties that was based on manga and anime that, I don't know if just the licenses were cheap or what, that somehow just made it over to the West. Like, you had Crying Freeman, of course Fist of the North Star, and I want to say that a lot of it was also kind of fueled by the Power Rangers phenomenon.
Yeah, that's a good point. And then the movies you mentioned, Crying Freeman's being the best one, because it's actually more faithful to the first manga adaptation and like the first OVA that they did. Aside from the fact that, you know, it's Mark Dacascos with, they got guns in it, but it's a different kind of gun. And they tweaked a few things here and there, but it's still a really fun movie to watch. And like, I enjoyed the heck out of it when I saw it.
Yeah, I can't really speak on how faithful this movie is to the original material, because I think I can count the number of episodes of the original Giver that I've actually seen on one hand, and that's while I'm sipping tea.
Yeah, I've only seen the Out of Control OVA, the very first one they released, which is the one we reviewed like 2 years ago on the other podcast we were part of. And yeah. John, wait, didn't you read part of the manga for this? Like, I think you're more familiar with the Giver than I am.
Yeah, I'm almost caught up. The new volume's translation just came out about a week ago, and I haven't read that. But other than that, I've read it all. And this movie is not at all faithful, but I wouldn't expect it to be.
Because, the hell you say?
you can never really expect a movie to perfectly adapt the source material, and this, it's just like it uses some of the characters, but they're not at all like in the manga. Obviously there's no like rapping character in the manga.
Well, yeah,
a definite product of the 90s right there. Jeez.
Yeah, this is a very dated movie, but that kind of makes it more enjoyable just because of how ridiculous it is.
It's almost dated just by the cast, because you got, in the lower points of their career, Jimmy J.J. Walker from What's Happening.
Yeah, and Good Times.
Oh, it was Good Times? I always mix those two up.
Yeah, well, it's actually interesting, because I actually...
That's right, Rerun was fucking What's Happening.
He keeps saying Dynamite in this. He said
Dynamite once at the very end.
That was the stinger. You gotta work it in somewhere.
Yeah, that's his cash cow thing. Actually, interesting enough, I think I've actually may have seen him once when I worked at a hotel in Raleigh when I worked for this parking company. And there was a guy that I worked with who apparently said, I think he was doing stand-up, and he was saying that like if you say Dynamite to him, like he gets really ticked off about it because he's had it said to him so much.
I sympathize.
That's what I heard 7-8 years ago, but he wrote a book recently that has the title Dynamite in it, so...
Well, how else are you going to sell them?
I guess that was a publishing idea, but that's true, too. I don't know. I've never written a book before about my life because there's not much there.
Although the crown jewel of guest stars in this movie is a pre-Batman the Animated Series Mark Hamill, before he bounced back.
Yeah, this was kind
with
of
a mustache.
Yeah, this is kind of a time when Mark Hamill was in very select movies, and it was like he's known for Star Wars and didn't do much. I know one of the movie made around this point that he did, which was like that one of the Children of the Corn sequels with the, Christopher Reeve that I saw a long time ago.
Oh yeah,
and, yeah, he was like a pastor in that. I remember how he died. He had like a hunting rifle and he was trying to kill the kids, and they find out and kill him or something.
And he was in some odd straight to video time travel movie.
Yeah, something like that.
I've been watching the 1990s Flash series, and he's the trickster in one episode of that, and it's sort of like a proto Joker because he has the same sort of laugh and everything. But
oh, the voice, yeah. You know, he's coming back for the new Flash show.
I didn't know that. No, I didn't.
Yeah, he's reprising the role.
That's interesting.
And he's supposed to be in the new Star Wars movie. However,
who's
that's
going to play.
Do what?
I said, oh, who's he going to play?
Yeah, I wonder.
Count Dooku's ghost.
What? What a twist. He was R2-D2, right? Was he Boba Fett? I don't know.
When you said R2-D2, I was thinking of that stupid ball in that train.
That was football D2.
So it would be like FUT-D2 or something.
He's got like some weird name like B9-D2 or some shit.
Oh, gosh.
I'm sure you'll get comments on correcting me.
I wonder, like, I guess you could see like, oh, how do R2-D2s made? When a mommy R2-D2 and a daddy R2-D2 love each other very much or get very drunk. Okay. I guess we'll get back into this. So I guess we can just go ahead and talk about the movie in depth because, like, if we spoil something, who cares? It's not that good of a movie.
Yeah. I don't know. I remember watching this when I was in high school when it first came out in the 90s, and it's been about as long. God, it's been 20 years since I've watched this goddamn thing. Oh, God, I'm old. But watching it now with, I guess, older eyes and more seasoned eyes, I like to say, mm-hmm. I have a little bit more of appreciation for it. Because the sense that I got was that a lot of it was kind of spearheaded by the guy who does the costume and makeup effects. Because wasn't it co-directed by, I believe the credit is Screaming Mad George?
Yeah, that's how it is on Wikipedia. And I'm like, is that really a... name, I guess so.
I think it was the costuming guy. So the vibe that I get watching this thing is that the studio got their hands on this license and figured, let's make a movie. We'll sell some VHS tapes.
Yeah.
So this guy studied it, thought, I want to make those costumes. And I have so many others in my closet that have yet to see film. So they made really awesome costumes. I'll give them that. The visual effects and the gore effects are really good. Most of the movie, to its credit, is action fighting scenes, which is really, when you're going into one of these things, that's what you want to do. And the rest of it was script, actors, fuck it, just have fun.
Clearly they did. All right, so the director of this is a guy by name of Steve Wang. And apparently his other work recently was Kamen Rider Dragon Knight on TV. And he worked on Guyver Dark Hero, and then another Mark Dacascos movie called Drive, and then he worked on Power Rangers Lost Galaxy. So clearly this guy has had some, he's getting work the past 20 years.
He's found his niche.
Yeah, and Dragon Knight apparently I think is a really big thing with Toku fans.
That'll take your word for it.
It's one of the only two series of Kamen Rider to actually get localized, so that was a pretty big accomplishment for him, I guess.
Yeah, but was it localized very well?
I have no clue. I haven't watched it.
Yeah, we have to ask Cloud about that, since he's like a resident tokusatsu fanboy.
I think Shark liked it.
I don't remember him saying anything about it, him liking it, but that was years ago whenever I talked to him, so.
Yeah, it was a long time ago. I think this was about 5 or 6 years ago that this came out, Kamen Rider Dragon Knight.
It said 09 online.
Okay, yeah.
All right.
Math sounds right.
All right, so, I mean, pretty much the movie starts at pretty anime where it's got you got the weak protagonist, crap, whatever his name is.
I think you're overlooking one very important thing about the beginning. It is the sign of any spectacular, you know, you're in for a good ride movie. The prologue text scroll.
Oh, the Star Wars-ish text scroll that gives the backstory on the aliens. And I was like reading it, and then I just kind of stopped caring. I was like,
exactly. You know that the movie is off to a good start where they have to just flood you with the text to show you what's up. Because I'm reading through the text. I'm thinking, why? That sounds like a much more interesting story. Why wasn't that the movie? Or at least, why do I need to know all this? I feel like I'm missing something.
They should have made two other movies before they got to this movie just based on that text scroll.
Now I'm just assuming that the Guyver is a sequel to something that has never been made.
Yeah.
It seems like the Guyver 2 actually should come first in a way, because it has... I watched it right before we recorded, and it has this scene where he's on a spaceship, and the spaceship like tells him all the things that happened on some alien planet about how the Guyver was created and the Zoonoids and all that, and it's like they should have shown that in the first one instead of just having some text, you know? They had like actual scenes filmed with, you know, a primitive Guyver from some other planet dancing around fighting Zoonoids and stuff, so that should have been included in this one.
That could be part of the fan cut.
Part of me wants to ask you more about the second movie, other than you cheater, like, how dare you watch it before I do, but then again, that saves me the time of asking you to watch it together since you already saw it.
Well, just watch it again. It was pretty good compared to
the first. Well, at least you're going to watch it again, so that says something about a movie.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to watch the first one again anytime soon, I don't think.
That's why we're doing this recording now.
Yeah.
Before your brain has had a chance to reflexively forget it.
Yeah. All right, so pretty much the premise starts out with this Asian scientist dude running down the streets of L.A. or the L.A. River, and basically hides a unit that we don't know about into, like, a lunchbox or whatever, and then he gets knocked down a spillway by this, like, pretty 90s rap gangster group that works for the corporation in this movie, the, Cronus.
Yeah, the gang consists of some random 90s gang members, also Jimmy Walker in his 40s, and led by Michael Berryman.
Yes, the guy who's in the original The Hills Have Eyes kind of thing.
The standard, like, if you need a creepy-looking dude, just give him a call.
Yeah, he's, like, the perfect actor for that. Also, interesting about this film is the fact that there's two actors from the Reanimator movie that were in this, too.
Yeah, the guy who plays the...
Jeffrey Combs is in it.
Did you guys catch Jeffrey Combs' character name in this?
Yes. Oh, yeah, Dr. East, and the Reanimator is Dr. West.
Yeah, I'm like, all right, fuck it. It's like, I quit caring a long time ago in this movie.
Well, he was a thrown-in character at the end. He was only, like, alive for, what, 5 minutes?
Right, this is all the more evidence that everyone had fun doing this.
No, what made it better was the fact when he transformed, when the monsters transformed, they lose all their clothes. But he had his glasses on and a tie around his neck.
Yeah.
And he's still talking like, well, I don't know if the Guyver unit will work, and you drifted out the wrong way or something. It's like, it doesn't matter, you're going to die. But then he winds up dying because the Guyver came out of his stomach, and we're jumping ahead, but who cares?
And at some point, they do get him with an overlarge syringe.
Oh. Wait, did that happen in the same scene? I can't even remember that.
No, God. It was earlier on. I think he was injecting Mark Hamill with it.
I don't remember.
Yeah, it's in one of his earlier appearances in the movie. Like, the main bad guy is talking with him. The dude's, like, loading up a giant syringe.
Oh, that was the first time I noticed him, because I was, like, waiting for him to show up on screen, and then I just know that he showed up when Asian girl got captured, so.
Right.
Which, all right, I guess we should kind of sort of follow the plot here. So before any of this happens, we get introduced to our protagonist, Sean...
Yes?
Sean, yes? Oh, no. Different Sean. Sean Barker. Sean Ryan Barker.
Yeah, I knew watching this, as we were going to talk about this, I'm going to be very confused during our conversation.
Now, I remember when Sean
was in a keto school.
Yeah. Well, Sean, you took a keto school, right? And got your butt kicked every day by the macho, half-Filipino Mexican dude?
Yeah, because I was, like, trying to practice right, and I noticed my girlfriend was crying off in the next room, and then my buddy, my sparring partner, noticed also and said, "Hey, Sean," and then broke my nose.
He's like, yeah, he was just like, "You're my bitch now."
See, here's what gets me. It's the fact that he noticed also that the girl was crying.
Yeah, no one else really noticed because, like, it wasn't like it was a mirrored room or anything. Like, people are welcome to look that way. And you can't help but to feel like, well, why is she so upset from this guy in this mustache that looks like Luke Skywalker? What did he do to this girl? But he's the only one that seems to notice. And then that's when homeboy...
It's in a sucker punch.
Yeah, sucker punched him. Yeah, and then, of course, the keto trainer who's like Mr. or Mrs. Macho Girl was just like, you got to control your anger better and everything. It's like...
Bitch, look at my nose! Who's bleeding in this?
Yeah, no, other than that, it was the fact that, like, why would you enroll a gang member into your school? That's not helping him.
I guess. And then siding with said gang member. Like I said, the dude busts up homeboy's nose, and then when they start getting into a scuffle, like, then they break it up, it's freaking Sean that's in trouble. It's like, I'm the one who's bleeding, and that's I'm the one being called out for unnecessary roughness?
Yeah, that's why I'm like, this is something out of, like, an anime series where the protagonist is a weak person, and then he's only cool and stronger when he gets the plot element, a.k.a. the Gyver armor.
By the way, teacher, I'll see you in court for hosting an Aikido school that has no safety gear. Where's our gloves and our helmets?
Holy crap, I did not think of that. And I took Taekwondo for 2 years.
Yeah!
I should have noticed that off the bat.
We're in a training school. We should have padding and crap.
This is the 90s, too. Like, they should have had that as... Yeah, I don't know, man. I mean, it's the inner city, and they're like, we're not going to give you pads because the other person doesn't wear pads.
And so I'm trying to get into the layer...
You've got to feel what they're going to feel.
And I'm trying to get into the layer of Hollywood of, okay, we don't want to put helmets on these guys to obstruct the actors' faces, but gloves... Shin pads? Maybe even some padding on the floor? I don't know. It's been a while since I've been in a dojo. Maybe things have changed since the 90s.
I figured it'd be more safer now than it was since the 90s. So, since everything's more politically correct, or who knows?
Yeah. Everyone goes in looking like the Michelin Man.
Martial arts, they're going to go to China and learn that from the monks who wear no padding and have to meditate under a waterfall in freezing temperatures. Because that's how it's done.
You're sending him to Pai Mei?
Yeah, or the... Fist of the North Star school. I mean, if he survives, survive. I know the training paid off. All right. But the scene then transitions over to the company CEO, David Gale, who was also in Reanimator, but he's been in, like, a bunch of stuff that, like, I know I've seen his face before kind of thing.
Yeah, this guy seems to be just eating up the role. Like, this is how I knew that the actors had fun. He is just hamming it up.
Yeah, well, he's, like, he plays the role of, like, Darth Vader in this because he starts choking Michael Berryman, like, with, like, a force telepathic thing, and then it's, like, basically making him punch in himself, and I remember the one line he gives him is, like, the line is, "I'll have yourself slap yourself into oblivion."
Why are you hitting yourself? Why are you hitting yourself?
Because apparently they lost the Gyver unit because the Asian dude replaced it with a toaster and gave the old switcheroo or whatever. And then, even like with that scene, like Mark Hamill is apparently a CIA agent, but we don't know exactly what he does.
Yeah, that's kind of an awkward thing.
You've got the black guy that's basically like his boss, perhaps, I don't know. And then the taller white guy, which his job the entire time is to basically write down notes and everything the black guy says.
Right.
That's his only
career. You're a loose cannon.
How do you spell loose? Is that with one O or two? Also, like, I kind of found it entertaining how they did, like, the transition scenes, but it was, like, they have, like, a weird angular triangle come through the middle of the screen, like it's a manga, like, a panel or something, and then that's their transition.
Oh, like the Transformers?
It's the same sound each time, too.
Yeah, I guess they couldn't afford different sounds for it or something. I don't know.
It is a lot, like, they ripped off a lot of stuff from Star Wars with this, you know, the kind of force-like scene and the very visible scene transitions and Mark Hamill, of course.
Well, I mean, if Mark Hamill had a glowing stick, that would have been an easy rip-off there. That would have probably made the movie better.
Yeah, Mark Hamill doesn't really get to use any weapons or anything in this.
He doesn't do a lot in this movie, because he's, like, trying to solve the murder of Asian girl and her dad, but then he also gets his butt kicked and stuff, and he fires his gun, like, once, but he just kind of holds it up. And he's just like, I think I'm going to shoot you. And then, like, the monster came in that one scene and he, like, fires all his rounds off and he's, like, empty or something. It's like, you're more like a private investigator than a CIA agent.
Yeah, his role was kind of confusing. He seems to have that bit that you see in a lot of 80s and 90s movies where he's the one cop who knows what's up and everyone kind of makes fun of him and laughs, but he's going to investigate and do his job.
Yeah.
But when he said CIA, he doesn't do anything that the CIA would ever do. It's barely what the FBI would do. Because, like, there's, like, the weird how they handle time in the scene where between where the chick's dad dies and stashes away the Guyver suit, and then Mark Hamill goes to the dojo, which, by the way, good thing he knew where she was going to be, to then break her the news that, oh, hey, your father's dead. Which would normally be, I don't know, like, the role of the police would call her, or maybe the hospital would contact her. But then we cut later on to the actual crime scene where Mark Hamill has, like, is like, yeah, your father's dead. We'll tell you what, I'm just going to show you. He's over here.
There's his body, what used to be his body. And I'm gonna light up my 30th cigarette today.
And they get there, and the coroner has just arrived to load the dad up to the ambulance. I'm thinking either Mark Hamill found her and brought her back there within 20 minutes, or they just left her father there overnight and this is the next day.
I don't know how the crime is in East L.A. or in L.A. in general, but I mean...
And this is also Los Angeles traffic? Yeah, good luck.
Yeah,
you gotta be Jack Bauer to get through that shit.
Oh, don't get me started on 24 logic, because that would be fantastic. But, like, the Wikipedia says it's like the L.A. River or whatever, but it's like basically like a giant cement spillway or runoff system that they have. But I don't know how much that city is built on runoff systems.
It does look a lot like the riverbed that they have there.
Okay.
Yeah, I've actually been there a couple times, and at least if it was filmed in L.A., it looks like L.A., but if it wasn't, they found a pretty reasonable facsimile.
Yeah, see, if we're on site locations of L.A. and California, like, you're kind of my go-to person since you're Californian, and you and Matt seem to talk about California half the time when you podcast, followed by alcoholic drinks.
Yes.
So I kind of trust your guys' judgment on what's what in L.A. or what can constitute as this landmark or what they're trying to pull off or whatever.
West Side. Represent.
Straight out of Compton.
Yeah.
All
right. It looks legit. I mean, if it isn't directly in the basin, that they got a good talent or they got a good location scout to find an actual, like, one place that looks like it.
Okay. Well, also the fact that our hero has a little, like, DUI wimpy moped that he drives around.
Like a true hero.
Yeah. I mean, he lives in the city. There's really no point of having a big car or anything, but it just, like, doesn't also, make him look any cooler.
Also, this is Los Angeles. This has not stopped anybody. This is where we got the Hummers.
Ah. And how I think, yeah, I know Arnold has, well, he's a movie star, everyone, which movie star doesn't have a Hummer, I guess. But no, he comes in that back alley, and that's when he gets harassed by the half-Latino, half-Filipino mob gang. And, like, the comedy trio of that little, like, the skinny little guy is always the funny one. And then, like, the guy who's leading them, I guess, is the guy from his Aikido class. And he's just like, I've seen him fight before. As in, he doesn't know what the heck he's doing.
And then he goes into a pose that illustrates, quite frankly, he does not.
No, he doesn't. And obviously they tease him and everything. And then, of course, the unit comes out of the backpack because he finds it, like, near the scene when he follows his Asian, like, soon-to-be girlfriend with Mark Hamill, because he finds in that lunchbox or whatever. And then apparently, like, I don't know if this is, like, truthful to the manga, but his face falls on it, and, yeah, like, that's when he's able to transform. Does that happen in the anime or the manga? I thought it did.
Well, I mean, the thing with the little dots on the back of his neck and it coming out of it is basically what happens in the manga, but...
Well, how does he first transform into the Guyver in the manga?
I don't really remember. It's been a while since I read the early part.
Okay.
It was dozens of volumes ago. Yeah, I was kind of laughing at that a little bit when Homeboy fell on it, like, eats shit right into the unit. Because they preface this thing in the wonderful, like, prologue scroll, and also they hint out through the beginning of the movie that Kronos had this thing. They found the Guyver, but no one ever could figure out how to activate it. Apparently no one had ever tried simply smacking it into your own face.
or passing out drunk and falling on it.
Yeah, just like,
stop your fall.
What if I just looked at it really closely? Bunk. Oh, there we go.
Or like you got two people like that, like look at it closely, and you got the one guy that's just like, I wonder what happened. They smack their friend into it, and they're like, we discovered how it works.
So how embarrassing is your multi-billion dollar international conglomerate based on technological advances that you basically couldn't figure out this puzzle box that could have been figured out by a primate? Like a chimpanzee could figure this out.
Yeah, like why didn't they give it to a monkey? Isn't that what they're used for?
We could have had...
The first thing a monkey would have done was smack it in its head. I'm like, I wonder what this does.
Oh, snap. This is how the aliens defeat us.
Primate monkey? Guyver monkey?
We're too busy thinking so outside the box that we forget to look back in.
And that box is in the form of inside of a cage.
Sometimes the answer is right in front of you. Really close.
Yeah, I guess their R&D division had maybe a setback in financial reasons. So maybe that's like that was the week they got rid of the monkeys. And they're like, we're going to have to figure this out on our own. And they're like, we can't. We're not that dumb enough to smack our head into it to figure out if it'll work or not.
Meanwhile, back in the lab, they're hearing news of how it was activated, and several tables are flipped. Microscopes are just knocked off of desks.
I'm sure
clipboards
like
are thrown to the ground.
I'm sure there's like four scientists like in each other's faces. Like, I was the one that came up with the idea first, and you shot it down. Told me it wasn't going to work, and you.
You all laughed at me.
You all laughed at my genius. All right, so anyways, like with that fight, he basically wins by, I don't know, the stupid, like, apparently by just, like, doing the same punches and stuff. But it was funny how the little small, like, gangster dude had nunchucks on him. And the one guy had a gun, which, you know, obviously didn't work or anything. But it was the fact that, like, he had the one gangster that carried around these giant nunchucks, and they broke 5 seconds after using them.
Well, it was
and
the 90s, just, like, you know?
Yeah, he was just kind of like, I think this is how it works. I've watched Bruce Lee movies. Oh, I know what I'm doing. Oh, I got a knife.
Yeah, he, like, throws it over his shoulder on accident or something.
I didn't look when it happened. I just assumed it just disintegrated in 50 parts, and I was like, oh, I guess that's what happened. Because I thought that was funny.
He just gets thrown like everybody else. That's all the Guyver does to these guys.
And perfectly planned safe boxing or box locations where people throw the trash away. That's very ultra padded if you happen to land into it.
I gotta give these gang members some props though, because despite right in front of them seeing the guy that they were harassing transform and see his body augmented and brutally changed into this horrific 6'5" monster thing, mm-hmm. they still stick around and go, you know what? We still got a shot at this. We're not going to run. We're going to give him a go. In fact, they even try to intimidate him a little bit.
Yeah, they got their street cred on the line. They're like, we're not going to hear the end of this if we run away from a fight from a, you know, half alien monster person. Because if we beat him, man, we got that side of, you know, East LA to control all three blocks. We need those three blocks, man.
Never mind, they don't even once consider that they're never going to hear the end of this, because if they confront this guy, they're just going to end up as one heaping mound of bucket monkey on the pavement.
I don't know, I'm looking at these notes, and really, like, other than that, he goes to see his Asian girlfriend, and they almost have a moment, and then that other annoying girl shows up, and then, like, he goes out to get... Here's what I find interesting, like,
yeah.
Especially when you mention time in this movie, they'll say, like, oh, I'm going out to lunch, and it's, like, dark outside.
I know, I got that, too.
And he comes back, like, I know he goes out to go get food, and he comes back with, like, a giant bag of groceries, like, what, 8 hours later, and he's like, I'll be back for lunch, and I'm like... When is lunch for L.A.? I don't understand.
Well, let me rewind this a bit, because let's look at the whole scene here as a whole. This is how Sean wins Boyfriend of the Year. First, he knocks on her apartment door. Not once does he say anything like, hey, I saw you crying last night. What's up? Are you okay? He waits for her to bring it up. And then, when she does bring it up, not once does he say anything along the lines of, oh, yeah, your dad, you know... I saw some guys hauling his body away. I was kind of off in the distance watching things go down. Nope, never brings that up. And then also neglects to bring up, oh, and while I was there just hanging around the crime scene, seeing you weeping over your father's corpse, I found this weird thing that I suspect is something he was working on. It's probably important that I get it back to you. Nope, never brings that up. And then when, like you said, he says... Yeah, tell you what, I'm just gonna go grab something to eat. He never suggests or says, can I pick up anything for you? Because
I thought he did.
I'm assuming he's like, I'm gonna go grab something to eat, which means I'm gonna grab something for me, and when I'm done eating, Or I'm going to bring my own McDonald's back, and I'm going to eat in front of you.
You're right, because he says, because he's like, oh, you need a moment alone with this person. And he's, I thought he was just like, I'm just going to go run down to the corner market, like, you know, 5 minutes from here and pick something up and come back.
Yeah, because
that was, if that was the impression he left.
If he was a gentleman, you could assume he's going to grab something for both of them. But every moment leading up to that, including him not asking, what would you like me to get? Just suggest to me, oh, he's just going to grab a sandwich for himself and come back. And then, like you even described, BRB equals 2 to 5 hours later, because by the time he gets back, the sun has set, and it is dark.
I wonder if he just went to, like, a Whole Foods and got lost, or, like, he's really OCD on what he wanted to eat and, like, couldn't come up with a decision or something. He's not the brightest bulb or brightest hero.
And you can see that the filmmakers had a little bit of, like, okay, well, how do we show that the sun has set? Because they had to inject this little scene with Michael Berryman and his girlfriend.
Oh, yeah. They had, like, the longest talk in the car about, like, going to Brazil or something.
We're going to Brazil, baby. Can we go shopping? Yeah, we can go shopping. And you're
sure.
Like, this should have been a deleted scene, but they could not have deleted it without it being even more jarring that suddenly, bam, the sun's down.
I also like the fact that her outfit is, like, something you would probably get from, like, a stripper store or something. It's so 90s to look at because of that, like, I don't know what you would call it, the halter top she had, but it was, like, the cross-stitching, like, going up the middle or whatever.
It's like she was wearing a corset backwards.
Would it be an inverted corset? No, wait, I don't know if it's an inverted corset. I'm not a woman's fashion designer by any means. That's not my major.
Well, surely, Dustin, you have seen many a corset on many a lady. I mean, I would just assume.
Well, that's, yeah, you would say reverse, but it, God.
And then David fell over.
No, is this something Kelly Hightower would know?
We could ask her.
All right.
I'm not assuming that anyone will comment on this to correct us.
All right. Oh, I figured she'd listen to this and go on your podcast and be like, you two don't know anything about women's fashion from the 90s. Like, no, we don't.
Why weren't you on this podcast, Kelly? Why didn't you step up to the plate?
Yeah.
Huh? What up?
Kelly Rousedower?
Not enough transsexuals, I guess, in this podcast.
Or cross-dressing anime people.
Or drag queens, yeah.
Drag queens, that was the term.
Not enough drag queens in the Guyver. Mm.
I guess we're just not your target demographic, Kelly. That's too bad. I don't mean to crap on her.
That's okay. I think I heard David fall over.
I'm okay, but okay. What is this thing about the drag queens?
Oh, now we have your attention.
I listen to his podcast a lot, and she made a crack. Not really a crack, but a suggestion at ours. She's like, she says she'll listen to our podcast, this other podcaster, if we ever talked about or mentioned about drag queens or something. And I'm thinking...
Yeah, it was Kelly Hightower of the Mating Habits of the Modern Geek podcast. And I believe what she says was she would guest host on your podcast if you talked about transsexuals or transvestites or drag queens.
We've talked about Chris Chan, if that counts.
Not enough high caliber. I'm talking about fabulous trans drag queens.
Not fabulously autistic.
Not sad.
Transgenders by claim. All right, I'm trying to. Okay,
we've derailed this conversation enough.
Yeah, well, that's typical in this podcast. All right, I think we're on time dilation and how it's in this movie.
So homeboy shows up just in time, 5 hours later to see, because God, they must have taken a while of their time to kidnap that chick too. Because it takes her a while them to, like, El Kabong her and then wrap her up in a rug.
Yeah, I don't... Maybe they have to have a conversation or pretend to fix on her, like, washer and dryer unit for 4 hours or something. And then they're like, okay, she's really, really distracted and thinks we're like, actually maintenance people. Let's go ahead and knock her out or something.
I do take that back, though, because as soon as homeboy goes into the apartment, he notices that the whole place has been ransacked. So maybe that's what they were doing for 4 hours.
And then, finds... That's true, too, but then also finds the girl on the ground that came in and interrupted their almost kiss.
I guess they only had one rug.
Yeah. Well, no, I think that kind of makes sense because, like, they probably went up there and then, like, tied her and, like, basically searched her apartment inch by inch for the unit. And they realized it wasn't there after 5 hours, which is the time he was coming back up to her room.
Yeah.
And then on the scene is Mark Hamill, because he knows what's up, and pretty much shows up to save the day by basically, like, threatening to shoot them, but nothing really happens.
He shows up by having a gun.
Yeah, but, what was really awkward about that was when Michael Berryman, or in this movie his name Lisker, is the fact that he was, like, running down the street, like, the alley, but the way he was running and holding this gun was so awkward looking. It was like he never knew how to handle a gun, and he was like had this very stiff arm pointing at, like, I'm coming to you.
Well, it's not often he even gets speaking roles. God bless that guy.
I had no problem against a speaking role. I thought he did fine.
Yeah, he doesn't... Well, I mean, if he doesn't get speaking roles, it's harder for him to actually get some kind of action scene outside of, you know, just being in the background somewhere, being the creepy dude.
Yeah. But then this also transitions us to a movie within a movie when Good Times guy, or Jimmy Walker, transforms and is like, screw this, I run faster when I'm monster mode, and hops over the wall, and like, basically there's a... Her name is, according to Wikipedia, it's like Lena Quigley, whose title is Scream Queen.
Yeah.
And apparently on her Wikipedia profile, that's like who she's famous as and all of her acting roles. But she held that note for like a solid half minute. And I was like, run out of air already!
I wasn't sure why they did that scene. But I guess if that's her specialty, it makes sense.
It was a little bit of a breaking the fourth wall a little bit. Because wasn't the director in that scene the director of the movie also? So it was sort of a gag on, oh, you've got these guys in monster costumes. What if, during the chase scene, they ran into a movie being filmed that has rubber monster guys? And oh, and they mistake them.
Yeah. I mean, you can tell they had a good time making this, because, I mean, that's a very tongue-in-cheek scene there.
Yeah, this is not a serious movie by a long shot. So.
Oh, yeah. I mean, as is, I mean, are we gonna get into Jimmy Walker's monster costume? Racist than Jar Jar?
No, not only that, let's get into how Homeboy raps about everything.
Okay, because I
found that more entertaining, too.
Okay, because I haven't felt uncomfortable about a character design like this since Transformers 2.
Oh, the racist robots?
Yeah.
Yeah, if you want to take it away on the... I think I know
no, that's it,
say.
Man. I mean, the rapping doesn't help.
Well, it was the fact that he's got Mr. T chains all over his neck, and like he's creeping around the warehouse that they go to, and all you hear is him busting rhymes and clang, 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 because you just hear constant rattling from his necklaces.
Throwing down those dope lyrics, I mean...
Yeah, dope lyrics that include, because I quoted it also, I want that jiving, jiving thing, boy! Jesus.
Rap battle one, drop the mic. Take that shit to 8 Mile.
Let me pull out my monster mic attack and drop it to prove that I my superpower or something.
I'm convinced I'm convinced that Jimmy Walker wrote his own lyrics.
You know, I didn't think about that, but you're probably right.
Like, it's just a little, like, it's like a little director's note in the script. And he's like, oh, you know, shit, I gotta come up with something.
You know, I don't think he wrote it, I think he just ad-libbed it.
Yeah, I'll believe that too.
Yeah, you're probably right. I doubt that any of that character's lines are even scripted. He doesn't say anything all that important. It's just, like, just rapping the whole time, and it's...
Yeah. I did know that the fact when they come to that fight in that warehouse that Guyver gains a sidekick, and that's that metal pole, the support beam in the middle, because he uses that as his finishing move for every person that he fights, because they happen to be in that same block or that area, so he happens to just throw them in the pipe every single time, and it's like, you know, and that apparently knocks them out for a period of time or maybe kills them or something, I don't know.
Yeah, they could have been more original with the action sequences.
To his credit, hey, it works. If it ain't broke.
Yeah.
Because I saw that happen a couple times, and I'm like, I wonder how many times they're going to use that pipe. And it was more than I dared to count. Go ahead.
Well, what bugs me is with that extended scene where they're chasing after him, and also beating the crap out of him, all the whole time thinking, is it morphing time yet? Are you going to pull that thing out? You know you have it, and you know how to turn it on, and clearly you're in over your head. This might also impress the girl. I don't know, if you suit up.
Are you talking about the breast fire attack thing that Guyver has?
No, I'm just talking about him getting in the Guyver suit.
Oh, yeah, that's true, too. It's
like that whole middle sequence where they're chasing after him and beating the crap out of him in human form. It's like, it's morphin' time, dude.
I was like, how angry do you have to be to transform? Like, is this like Hulk levels, or do you just... Because he screamed like the third time, and then he transformed.
Like, I don't want anyone to know my secret. I think the secret's out, dude. They know you got it.
Yeah, why do you think they're chasing you? Like I said, he's not the smartest guy. But then also that leads us to, I thought the breast fire, I know it's an actual attack or whatever, but like, I just call it breast fire because it's kind of like Mazinger Z, sort of. But he's about to use it when he's like pinned down on the ground from Michael Berryman, and that's when he gets like the metal socket thing out of him, and that's when he, you know, apparently dies.
Right.
And I was like, all right, so the Guyver's dead, and there's 30 more minutes left of this film.
Credits.
And I was like, So then my thoughts instantly went to, like, okay, maybe the girl's going to get it, or maybe, hopefully this will work out, like, if Mark Hamill was able to turn into the Guyver, since they captured him.
Yeah.
And then John was telling me that like there was like two other more units of the Guyver units. So I was like, well, maybe they might introduce that. But I'm like, that's probably giving this movie way too much credit.
Yeah. spoilers, but watch the second one if you want to see more Guyvers.
All right.
This one does not really have any good villains like that. I mean, I guess the monster at the end is pretty cool, though. But other than that, it's like rapping monsters and forgettable, goofy-looking costumes.
Yeah, because the ending of this is what we talked about in the very beginning about the being in the lab. And the guy from – or Jerry – Jeffrey Combs is in this as the doctor, Dr. East. And everyone turns into a monster and pretty much So this was interesting because I thought like the unit, because apparently the Asian girl gets it back by kicking David Gale in the crotch and like taking it out of the metal case, and it was like fusing around her arm or latching onto her. I'm like, okay, awesome, she's the next Guyver. I don't really care. That maybe that's kind of cool. And then apparently like they rip it from her, then Jeffrey Combs chokes on the unit, and then apparently like the Guyver is able to do like a C-section. And, like, as soon as he has his spike come out of his stomach, you hear the Jaws music play.
Yeah, just bust out.
And then, like, he apparently is, like, able... Like, I was expecting him to pop out. He was going to be, like, a two-foot-tall, like, Guyver unit. I was like, so is this going to be midget Guyver fighting all these monsters? I'm like, that would make this movie more entertaining. And then, but he was, like, regular size when he came out.
Yeah. When does he get the elbow blades? Is that before or after he's quote-unquote killed?
He got the elbow blades in that first fight because it just happened to appear. And that was like his like other main attack if punching didn't work as well.
Okay, that's one thing that's always bothered me about the Guyver in all incarnations is the elbow blades. I don't understand the elbow blades. That is the worst possible weapon you could have because you're more likely to stab yourself when you're fighting with that thing than harm anyone else.
Well, no, in the second battle, he cut up the one dude, like the bigger regular human dude, like up the middle, like, and he didn't even touch him. So I thought he had like some sort of like beam attack or air, like, I don't know, whatever with the claw, but he thought he killed his Asian girlfriend, but she wound up being fine or whatever. But like, cause I was wondering how he did that, but it was like, they just kept the camera to a low shot. And then they went back up to the other monster and it had him like going like, no, he killed the girlfriend of, Michael Berryman. Gosh, I'm so tired of saying these names. Yeah, that was it. And then that's what made Michael Berryman, like, really mad and wanted to beat him up even more in that warehouse or whatever.
Oh, okay. But yeah, I don't know how... Like, you can get away with it in a couple scenes in a movie, but how it sustains throughout a whole TV series and a manga series, I don't know. It's like, every time you're going to block or anything, you're more likely to stab your thigh or your abdomen than anything else.
But does the Guyver work like Wolverine, where like you take injuries but he self heals? I mean, because it's the fact like nothing, like people punch him and like he gets shot by bullets, but then like nothing really happens to him.
Yeah,
because
for me, it's almost
that really harms him is if they get the crystal on his forehead.
Oh, and rip it out. Well, I mean, we already saw what that happened to him the first time, and he died. So
it also kind of bugs me in the same way that the Predator has his blades mounted on his forearm. If he bends his wrists backward for any reason, he's going to stab himself in the hands.
Well, all right. I'll add this to it. The Predator, as a well-trained hunter, and has been learned how to hunt and how to use weapons for all of his life. So I think they know subconsciously how to control a claw in their hand, compared to a mild-mannered teen who just got this armor and doesn't know exactly how it fully works yet.
Touche, Dustin. Touche.
I know that's stupidly geeky comic books, like trying to put reality into it, but like at the same time, kind of makes sense.
I can assume it's ingrained in the genetic kung fu that the Guyver suit has, because this guy has no martial arts skills.
He has a understanding of martial arts skills that he throws money at that's not paying off for him.
He has seen martial arts and has been told what they look like.
He sees martial arts if his girlfriend's not in the same dojo as him, where he can't glare off like a 14-year-old boy infatuated with another female.
That's true. We don't even know if the girlfriend is in the class. She just kind of shows up.
Yeah, and then also it's also the fact that like we don't know how long he's been coming to taking Aikido lessons anyways. Like, how long has he's been, like, how far has he progressed, if he's progressed at any? Has he started a week ago, 6 months ago?
And how long have they been friends? Like, that wasn't even in the text scroll.
Yeah. But that's not relevant to the plot of this story. It's all about the Guyver, I guess.
True this.
Yeah. Well, anyways, like the movie pretty much ends with how the main CEO guy, David Gale, turns into a monster himself, which is like a walking triceratops deer or something. And then that's when... basically the Guyver's able to use the breast armor or breast beam attack on him.
He takes him out with a Care Bear stare.
All the way back to the other side of the building, which looked pretty, which I was like, oh, that's pretty cool.
He takes him out with a Care Bear stare.
Yeah. And then, of course, it ends with him transforming back and being completely naked, which I assume they're going to get it right. They're going to get it on right then and there in the science lab. But then she's able to compose herself and give him a lab coat, and she's like, let's go ahead and leave.
Yeah, I don't want to fuck while wallowing around in Mark Hamill's roach guts.
Yes. Yeah, we did not. So yeah,
not Mark, cool.
Okay, yeah, spoiler alert. Mark Hamill turns into a giant centipede cockroach, human centipede thing. And
it's like the fly.
Well, he's got like this face doesn't turn to a monster. It's just like you just see these eyes look like left to right the whole time. And he's like, oh god, I look ugly. You've got to kill me now. Well, never mind. I'm dead anyways.
They have a kind of a cool effect where they use his face and his actual head. Well, it shows his neck extending from the cockroach body.
That looked pretty cool.
Like, I know how it was done, but you know what? I'm cool with this.
Yeah, I mean, I have to give this. The movie has credit for me on special effects, at least for what they had to work with regarding like how the Guyver transformed, which is like how the stuff wrapped around him. And because I was looking at this, and I was like, that's actually kind of cool. And then like how Mark Hamill transforms, like because the designs on this, at least some of the monsters or most of them were like, you know, they're pretty good looking. They're like, they're not that cheap looking.
Yeah,
it's time. So I give the movie credit for this. And so after that scene, that's pretty much the end of the movie. And it doesn't really open it up for a sequel or anything.
I think it kind of does, where it has Jimmy Walker's character come back at the end.
Oh yeah, that's right. And then the CIA guys
we've got a job for you,
Dynamite.
Yeah, they don't follow up on that at all in the sequel.
The hell you say?
Yeah, they recast everybody.
So how did you think David Hayter performed in Guyver Dark Hero?
Well, I guess he was better than in the first actor. What was the first actor's name?
Jack Armstrong, and he doesn't even have a Wikipedia article about him.
That name sounds so legit. Totally not a nom de plume. Sure, that's your name. What Alan Smithy's taken? Well, shit.
Oh, man.
I think the second one must have been done with a much smaller budget, and that's why they couldn't get back anybody from the first one.
Like, Jack Armstrong was asking for too much money? Was he in anything after the Guyver?
I don't know. Let me look on IMDb real quick.
Yeah, let's see how far his career went.
Yeah, just because it's one of those things where just because it's not on Wikipedia doesn't really mean too much.
Let's see how far this rabbit hole goes.
All right, so
I've never seen another movie.
Okay, Jack Armstrong. There's a IMDb on him, so I've clicked him. They have him credited for, as of recently, he was in the Grimm TV series as Nathaniel. He was in Leverage. He's been in Days of Our Lives from 1999 to 2003.
I was going to say, have you scrolled down to see that it's the same guy from The Guyver?
Yeah, that's what it said.
Same guy.
Sean Parker, The Guyver. After that, he worked on Dark Justice. He was in Beverly Hills 90210, the 94 TV series, as like someone named Mike Ryan. He was in an episode of Friends. He was in 28 Days. Oh, that's something else, I think.
When did the Guyver 2 come out?
Guyver 2 came out in 94.
Okay. I was going to say, it's like, so by that point, he hadn't pretty much gathered enough fuck you money to go, I'm too big for the Guyver 2.
I think this guy's just taking on TV roles. Like, in Days of Our Lives, he's listed as D.A. Carson Palmer. And then, in Bold and the Beautiful, he's Chad Huffington.
What was he doing in 94?
94, he was in Where Are My Children TV movie.
Okay. Maybe there was a scheduling conflict.
He was in Beverly Hills as Mike Ryan, so, but there's only two things he did, so.
Okay, yeah, he was soaking up Fox money.
Yeah. He was in a pilot for a TV series called Eden, so. And then anything before that was, I don't know, he was also in the 86 year of All My Children.
Well, wherever you are, sir, Jack Armstrong, God bless you.
Yeah, I thought you didn't. I mean, your role could have been better. I mean, well, yeah, it could have been better, Jack Armstrong, but with this movie, it's like, not going to hate you too bad.
I mean, you could have taken a kung fu class, but honestly, the script didn't really call for a lot. I mean, the script called for you for being bad and a poser at what you were, and by golly, you brought that.
It's not like he could really have used kung fu skills when his role just calls for him getting punched in the face.
Yeah.
So all right.
How do I train to be terrible at martial arts? I know. I don't practice martial arts. I feel that any practice of martial arts would be disingenuous to the character.
Yeah.
That would have been too much effort on his part. I think that's going to do it for Guyver. We've talked about everything about this movie that you need to know. And watch on your own discretion, even though we spoiled everything, but that was for good measure. It's rated 4.7 out of 10 on IMDb, and that is a score you can fully count on.
Yeah. I was going to say, spoiling it isn't going to really bother much for this movie, because it's one where just watch a bunch of filmmakers having fun doing stuff, doing movie stuff. And that's the vibe I got. I had fun watching them have fun.
I'm actually curious how much money this movie made.
Was that in the wiki?
It's not in the wiki at all. I'm looking on IMDb and...
It can't have been too much, because I think the sequel was direct-to-video.
Yeah, but it would have had to make something.
Wasn't the first one direct-to-video also? I don't think this got a theatrical release, did it?
I thought it did.
Mark Hamill, but I could be wrong.
It's also misleading that the fact that the cover of the DVD for Guyver has Mark Hamill's face connected to the mask, and he's not the Guyver.
Is that
a way of saying to sell it? Because I actually first noticed this movie when I was at the Coconuts video store in Cary, like when that Coconuts was in the Walnut Creek Shopping Center before it became that FYE and then shut down to become something else. And, like, I was in the video section there, and I happened to notice, because I knew about, like, what Guyver was at the time back in high school, so this was, like, 2003 or something. And it was, like, next to the anime section, but it was, like, in the action section. And then I kind of noticed, like, oh, they made a live-action Guyver movie? And that was, like, the first time I noticed it, but I just, like, it was only up until, like, today the first time I ever saw it, so.
Yeah. Now that I think about it, I don't know if it got a theatrical release. I may have missed if that was said. if it was probably direct-to-video, but also easily it filled up airtime on a lot of the premium movie channels. Like, this is something that I'm pretty sure I would have seen, like, on Cinemax or Showtime, like, at 2 in the morning.
Or maybe UPN or something.
Yeah, I remember being introduced to a lot of my early anime and live-action adaptations of anime through, like, Showtime and HBO and such, because that's even when I first saw the live-action Fist of the North Star, is when they made a big deal about it premiering, like, at 11 p.m. on Showtime. It's Fist of the North Star live-action. I'm like, fuck yes.
Oh my gosh.
And I was so excited. I was only slightly less excited after I'd seen it.
At 12:30 at night, like, they could air this earlier, and I would have gone and had a decent bedtime.
Fuck it, I'm 15. I don't even care if I got school tomorrow. I got nothing to do. Watch Fist of the North Star.
5 hours of sleep? I can function possibly one day at 15 with that much sleep. I'll just sleep through math class as I usually do.
Wait, I have an idea. I'll fill up the time staying up late by doing all my homework. Who the fuck am I talking about? That got down. I'm playing Super Nintendo. Whatever.
Yeah. I was like, well, Fist of North Star was a letdown, but I'll just play at Super Nintendo. Oh, school's in 4 hours. I'll make it.
Fuck it.
I think that's all we want to say about this movie.
Good times.
This recording has been going on almost as long as this movie. That's kind of sad.
Criminal.
Yeah. I guess aside from our random segues, it kind of evens out to about roughly an hour, so I'll accept that.
That's what I call a podcast.
Yeah, and this isn't the greatest movie ever. We're like, okay, let's go to social media and get questions from people, because
no one's talking to us.
Yeah, no one's talking to me about that. I'm not that cool as Paul Unicorn Chatman. I guess what I can say is we do our thing. We still do closing remarks. Where basically you just kind of say whatever you want to. So, Sean, do you have any closing remarks before we cut this off for the night?
Yeah, I'm glad I got into this. I'm glad you invited me into this project and gave me an excuse to see this thing with different eyes. And I think I appreciate it a lot more than I did when I was a teenager, back when I was still jaded and bitter that things weren't pixel perfect to its original material. But yeah, this was fun.
Yeah, so since you've become an adult, you're not the typical weeb crowd as they are on the internet today, complaining about everything when they don't get their way.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah, I've learned to just enjoy cartoons and comic books and just generally not give a fuck. I mean,
yeah,
that's how we roll on Method to Madness. Whenever we watch an anime or whatever, it's a very relaxed, and we may not have all the details, but I think our policy is we don't care what's fact, we just care what's funny.
That's a good policy. When are you going to get around to those Indiegogo perks? You're working on it?
This is a fantastic question. Kevin is a little bit harder to get a hold of these days, because I think in May is when he's supposed to marry his fiancée. So I think that and a couple other things is keeping him pretty busy. But
is he going to marry her before or after Animasement?
I think the date is before.
Okay,
I think
that's well, Animasement's in the last weekend of May.
Yeah, I'll have to check the date again, but I think it's in mid-May. But if I find that if he's dragging his feet a bit too much, because last I heard, the first show that we were supposed to cover is Kuranai, and I think he said he's watched most of it. But if it gets to be an actual problem, then I might be either looking for a guest co-host or may even do a couple solo. I know that a couple of our Indiegogo contributors earned the perk of getting on the podcast with us. So I at least know that those shows I'll have someone to kind of bounce my stupid dick jokes off of.
All right.
But the ones that we have in the immediate time, we're going to have to work it out. But I'm going to have to – certainly by the end of this year, they will all be released. It's just a matter of when they start coming out.
All right. Well, I'm just kind of throwing out when he gets his Soul Bianca eventually, which is my perk, if you want to have me on to do that, I don't mind. Even though I didn't pay the money to do it, but
we may just take you up on that, Dustin.
All right.
Stay tuned to alphacounter.com for details.
I finally get on your podcast after begging for like 4 or 5 years.
Well, you made it onto our YouTube channel.
Yeah, that was the illegal way. Like, wait.
Oh, that's 100% legit.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's like, if it's part of your canon material, then it is legit. So.
I think it got to the point, because we all watched it together in the same room. It was Kevin and Paris, and we even had Kelly over to watch it shortly after you had sent it. And once we got to the point of puppet sock, or sock puppet Kevin, upturning the bottle of Bailey's, we thought, glug, glug, glug. We're like, yep, nailed it.
I that was all improv. I didn't plan anything out except to just how to draw Kevin's face on a sock.
I think that got the biggest laugh. Also, the uncanny resemblance of the sock puppet detail to Kevin's actual visage.
That was pure mistake, too. The sock puppet is next to me, actually. Because I thought about it, I was just like, all right, well, I want to make fun of that one comment or post that you have on your site, and I want to do it in the sock puppet Kevin voice, but I just have to get around to actually doing it, so.
Well, you took me to task, and I am not regretting this.
I'm glad I convinced myself to think that was at least a decent idea when I heard it at work, and I was like, they're joking about me being on your show.
Just wait, go to, what's that?
I was like thinking, I was like, you know, listening to you guys joke about it on like the cross-ups, and I was like, wait, could that actually work? And I was like, I might as well just do it and see how far it goes.
Only one way to find out, Dustin. Only you could make it happen.
I'm a bad ventriloquism in action, so.
And I guess if anyone wants to see this, go to alphacounter.com and click on our YouTube icon, and they'll take you to our YouTube channel.
I do want to throw in my final remark, which is tied to this, is the fact that I'm giving a shout-out to the Anime 82 podcast and finally putting out the second episode of that 21 questions thing that I submitted to you, Reagan, over a year ago, that you're finally sort of getting around to it. And the fact that you actually gave my co-host enough time to answer their questions instead of cutting them off. So I'm not entirely pissed at you for that. But he was also giving me, like, he was giving me shit on that, too. But, like, Dustin, what the heck, man? Why are you, like, talking to a sock puppet? Why'd you podcast with a sock puppet? I don't get that, man. And instead of him emailing me that 8 months ago when I asked him what was up with him not answering my questions right, then he goes, he uses his own podcast to trash me. So I got this chance to trash him now. So that's what's up, Reagan. Your role.
That may be what I end up doing, is if I can't get actual Kevin to co-host with me on Method Madness, I might enlist you, accredited as in-character sock puppet Kevin.
I have commented on
Can you keep that up for 45 minutes to an hour, Dustin? Because I believe in you.
Can we just do like segments where like I have to like do the whole timeout thing? Like I need like a break and some more beer. I'll get right back to you, Sean.
That's what editing's for. I do it every episode.
Or we'll be talking and my voice keeps going in and out.
Just like Kevin. It's perfect.
All right.
But by the way, do you run promos on this podcast, right?
I do it for well, you. Yeah.
I am going to send you a fresh batch. If you haven't already seen the link that I posted on Twitter already for our brand new promos.
I have not. If you can just email me those. And I actually wrote up a script for doing our own new promo for us.
Oh, yeah.
It's just us getting around to actually recording it. And I wrote it up like before my fall semester started, and it's just been sitting on my iPad because I just like, oh, I want to do it. But it was always I forgot or I was either too busy, and then I think John and I are going to try to attempt that. Yeah. So hopefully this month, and I'll send that to you, obviously. And
yeah, you produce
people.
It, I'll play it.
All right, thanks. And speaking of John, what are your closing remarks?
Well, I guess look forward to our Gundam the Origin review. That's probably what we're doing next, right?
Yeah, that would be a good idea, because I finished up Volume 3 and 4 of the manga, and we haven't put out a Gundam the Origin review in almost a year, so we're horrifically slacking behind on that, and that is up to me, so...
Yeah, we've only reviewed about a quarter of the volumes that are out, so...
Do you want to mention something about Chris Chan real quick, since that's been big news on him, as we usually do?
I guess we do our update segment on that. He's...
This just in for Chris Chan?
That's like 2 or 3 weeks ago.
For vandalism and assault.
Wait, repeat all that again. I kind of talked over you, so I don't know if it okay. All right.
He was arrested last month around the end of the month because he had pepper sprayed a GameStop employee over the blue arms on the Sonic game and spent the weekend in jail, and he blames Sega for the whole incident and refuses to take responsibility for it.
What did he expect the GameStop guy to do about it?
Like, not give him any verbal or like mental harassment.
Well, he thinks GameStop needs to send it back to Sega and tell them to change the arm color.
Yeah, because it's defective.
He had an issue with the ass manager instead of, say, writing out assistant manager.
Ass manager. Yes. Spoke with the ass manager.
He also accused the person he pepper sprayed of being a rapist, which is really classy.
Which all the guy told him is like, you're defacing our property in this store, you need to leave. And yeah. We're being as bad as this as possible. And that was apparently way too much mental stress on this poor man's soul. So that gave him a reason to pepper spray him.
Yeah, they were just trying to enforce the ban that was already there because he's done this before.
Yeah, and this is all on video, by the way.
Hey man, this is how revolutions are started. How else are we going to make change? If we don't start pepper spraying guys who are forced to give you ads and work for $9.15 an hour.
He's also been going all around town picking up everything Sonic he can find and hiding it, like in fridges and stuff like that at department stores, and he's like extremely petty about this.
He's on a one-man guerrilla war against Sega.
He's on a mission.
Yeah, that's his only purpose in life, but like it's sending him to jail like when they have his hearing next month.
Yeah, in his mind, it's playing out like Streets of Rage, right?
He said he's going to kill Sega with knives and bombs also.
Well, that won't put him on a watch list. I mean...
Yeah. The FBI won't know about that.
I think Chris Chan's going to be okay. I'm sorry, I missed that. I was talking over you this time.
Right.
Oh, especially since he's already a convicted felon who's run over people. Not like the FBI's keeping track of him or anything.
Well, at least he has a record, and he's being monitored to some degree. He's a hero. I think we should all look up to him and laugh.
I was about to say, kiss my ass, John.
You have to speak to my ass manager.
Oh, I set you up for that. That was good. All right. Thank you for being on the podcast, Sean.
Thanks for having.
Everyone, check out alphacounter.com because they do this a whole lot better than we do. And I think we're still getting listeners. I don't know. But again, thank you for listening, for anybody listening to this. And you're welcome to donate for our cause. I've never thrown that plug out except maybe one other time. And actually, I do want to throw this out that I am planning. I mentioned this to John that I have an idea, and this is just an idea until I actually do it, but to do an Indiegogo to get John to go to Animazement this year. And the only progress I've made on that is writing up the perks amount, which basically what I did is I looked at your perks from your Indiegogo, Sean, and then marked everything down $10 less.
You're trying to discount.
Just trying to compete against you since you competed against Destroy All Podcasts.
So for $2.50, we will mention you on this podcast.
A mere 2.50 cents.
I think if you go for the perk of talking about a show for $15 for a listener, you will still drive the point home instead of going, fuck you, to Destroy All Podcast DX.
I'll be surprised if we just make a limit. So it's really there just to kind of pay for his plane ticket since I looked up prices on it, and then for him to pay for the weekend pass and...
Yeah, where do you live, John?
Phoenix, Arizona.
Ooh, yeah, that's a bit of a trek.
Yeah,
I think we looked it up. It was about $500, wasn't it?
It was over $400, but it's going to steadily go up the closer we get to that deadline, so it's better to start this now.
We're going to put you on a bus.
Or put you on it. Well, the train will take like 3 days or something. That's a terrible idea.
Yeah, I don't want to do Amtrak.
No, don't. I've had stories of that before, too.
I just endured some Amtrak troubles.
Ooh, where'd you go? Oh, weren't you in South Carolina for something?
We were. Well, that's. Well, I was in South Carolina for quite a while because my wife and I were coming back up from a trip to Orlando, and a freight train broke down in South Carolina, and our train was stuck there for 5 hours.
Oh, I thought you were going to say 5 days or something.
Oh no, we would have killed everyone on board and hijacked the train if that were the case.
Wait, when you went to Orlando, did you go to Universal Studios?
Hells yeah, we did.
Dude, I did that last March, man. I did a podcast about it.
Good news is you can hear all about it in an upcoming episode of Alpha Counter on alphacounter.com.
Nice. I'll have to listen to it and then comment about how my experience was different than yours and what rides you did. Wait, let me ask you this. Did you do roller coasters?
No, I'm not a roller coaster guy.
Okay, I'm too old to do them now because I get really sick easily.
Yeah. There's only like one or two roller coasters in Universal anyway. Everything else is kind of simulators.
Even the simulators got me messed up. Like the Harry Potter one messed me up for the day. Yeah, I did that and... I will say the worst thing that messed me up was eating Mexican food and then puking my guts out 2 a.m. that night.
Oh, that just sounds like a bad plan.
I remember the description of that on the podcast.
Yeah, I think you asked me if I recorded it, and I was like, why would I do that? And you're like, no. It was like, did you record Toonami?
Oh.
I was like, no, John, I would never thought to bring my phone and do a selfie recording of me, like, reenacting the scene from Team America World Police where the guy's puking his guts out in the alley.
It's for posterity. That's when you switch the camera on, and that's going on the Anime of Yesteryear YouTube channel.
Which is basically full of me doing my own little Let's Plays and streaming video games on there, so...
Or turn that into the live stream up on Twitch. Have a chat log going on the side, people commenting on you.
Like, where do you live? What hotel are you at? Let's call the ambulance. And like, or like, LOL, this guy's going to die. This is funny or something. All right. I'm going to go ahead and head out and take a shower and watch Toonami in a bit. Sean, thank you for being on. And I do want to have you on for Guyver Dark Hero.
I'll look it up.
Yeah, that'll come in due time. All right.
I think it's on YouTube.
Yeah, it's on YouTube. I ripped the Guyver movie and Dark Hero from YouTube because I didn't know how long those were going to be up for.
Because you're criminals.
Because I have a decent ripping software that's free.
Look, if I didn't watch this on the DVD, if I torrented the Guyver, I certainly wouldn't talk about it like a criminal. Not saying I did or didn't.
Well, aren't you just the...
I'm just going to let everyone assume for the best.
...citizen that supports the movie industry and everything.
Yeah, because Mark Hamill needs a 17-cent royalty.
True that. Are you recording? Are you like converting the audio now, or did you stop it? Or are we still recording?
No, this thing records for as long as the phone call goes.
Oh, I didn't know.
Yeah.
Wait, did you start the call, or did
I? Don't know if you... No. I got the notice that my software has been recording this entire time.
Okay, so I might as well just go ahead and hang up then.
Are we done?
Yeah, I don't know anything else to say.
All right. Well, you gentlemen have a good night, and I'll get this thing to you as soon as I can.
All right, appreciate it.
Talk to you later. Yeah.
All right.
Okay, no, never mind. I now got the notice that this thing is working. All right, awesome.
You sound different, but I think like the more you talk on Skype, the better it becomes.
Yeah, you gotta wear Skype out.
Yeah, that's it. You don't sound like you're going through a cave. It's now like you're 2 feet from me. So
okay. The good news is that no matter it's how it sounds to you guys on the local recording, I'm gonna sound magnificent.
Exactly, because you have that mixer.
Sort of. I'm just lucky that I have a Skype recording software that it records your guys' audio through Skype, but for the person who's making the call outward, it just takes it directly from the microphone.
That's what I imagine.
Yeah.
It's kind of like recording straight through like Audacity or something.
Something like that, yeah.
All right. All right, I've got my Samuel Smith's organic chocolate stout next to me. So that's actually my typical Saturday night beer when I watch Toonami. Like, one of these, it's like a pint, so it usually lasts a couple hours. And it's like downing a bottle of chocolate. It's so good.
I just finished off the last glass of some Venezuelan rum that my wife's family brought to the States when they came to visit.
Oh, snap. How
It's pretty
that?
Good, although I should not drink anything else tonight, at least not for a while, because my wife said I have turned a bright shade of red, which I have.
That and means it's working.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I mean, I don't feel different. I have no doubt that that's the cause of my discoloration.
Alcohol is weird, man. Like, I know, like, I could drink a little bit of it, and then, like, I feel like my face turning red, but I'm like, I can still, you know, walk down the hallway to the fridge.
I know.
So, like, I feel pretty good.
So I'm a different color. What, are you racist now?
Yeah.
What, you I can still walk and stand. Red? Don't judge me till I'm on the floor. Then I might have earned a little bit of judgment.
Well, I mean, that's better than in a car or...
Yes, it's a good thing I do this at home.
Yeah, it's better to drink at home. I mean, especially, like, being older, it's better to just drink at home, because I do that.
Yeah.
Because I'm not hurting anything. Like, I'll write a paper, and maybe the worst I'll do is grammatically mess something up. But I do that when I'm sober anyways, so it doesn't matter.
It's all good. I guess the real test of it all is how we respond the following morning.
Yeah, that's true.
So, David, I don't know if I have met you before. It's been a while since I've recorded for this podcast.
Yeah, I don't think we've had you on Anime of Yesteryear podcast before, have we?
No.
Okay. The last one I did was one of the Bubblegum Crisis ones.
Yeah, so that was...
That was two podcasts ago, wasn't it?
That we was keep changing our name. That was 3 years ago, so...
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I recognize your voice now from the promo that I run.
Oh, okay. That's almost as long as we've been saying we're going to review these Guyver movies.
All right.
I think we first said that in 2012 or something.
Yeah, we did it when we did the Out of Control OVA, and I was like, yeah, we could check out the Guyver movies, and then we never bothered to do that until I was like, well, gee, you know, you had surgery and everything recently, David.
What else are you going
to
do?
Want to talk about Guyver? Because I doubt I can get on Paul Chapman's podcast to talk about it, since he never writes me back.
Didn't he already do the Guyver, though? I thought he did.
You know what? Let's go to his website real quick.
Yeah, because I hadn't checked, but it's somewhere in the back corner of my memory.
You might be right, because, like, I put a bid in there for the Crane Freeman movie, because I would love to talk about that with him.
I was going to say, that may be why he's not responding to your emails. It's like, psh, idiot, do a Google search.
No, I checked, and he hasn't done Crane Freeman.
Okay, well, what about the Guyver?
That was a bit of a... All right, let me check. Archives, G. He did Guyver 2, not the first one.
Oh, okay. Yeah, the best thing to do is maybe just keep trying.
Yeah, I even put in a bid to review, like, Iron Eagle movies, since I have all of those, and I love them.
Yeah, I think for the most part, he's still trying to fulfill his Indiegogo perks.
What was this Indiegogo about? I didn't even know about that.
Oh, it was the same as ours, to just help pay for funding of the site.
Didn't he do, like, something like that a year or two ago or something for, like, his book? Oh, was that it?
No, it was a year ago. Oh. I think it was 1 year ago, and that was to fund the hosting costs for his site.
I think I remember that now, but I felt like that was, like, forever ago.
Yeah, it was long enough. I mean, he's been doing his own books regardless, and pretty much giving them for free on Amazon.
I think I've got all of those on free whenever you promoted it. I'm like, well, it's a free book.
Yeah, it's like, I want to somehow support my friend.
I should be supporting you, but, I mean, downloads is a number, so at least you know you're getting people reading your stuff. And I read a little bit of it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's something.
I share the link when possible.
All right. So, as usual, fair on this podcast, we usually divert to a 20-minute off-topic topic before we actually introduce ourselves, because that's how we roll.
Oh, shit. See, I had notes written down for the topic at hand. I had nothing for the off.
Oh, yeah. No, that's fine. We're just testing Skype. That's the perfect excuse for this.
There we go. We're Skyping it up.
I guess I should do a proper introduction, and I'll just be like, okay, edit this part out and use it as a bonus at the end or whatever. So
here's a big question on your editing process. My recording software records my input and then the people I'm talking to in separate channels. Would you prefer that, or would you like me just go ahead and mix it together as if it's a normal recording?
If you can put it as a normal recording, because if you want to just handle the recording part, and I do all the editing anyways, so that just makes it easier for me.
Yeah, what I may do just out of habit is maybe clear up any background noise, do some noise removal, and then send you the raw file after the cleanup.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah. It's all right. Automation. It's no big deal.
I didn't expect that. Thank you.
Oh, my God. Can I bitch about that?
Okay, I'm going to say cut here. All right, go ahead.
Okay, never mind. Because my whole thing is it was so surreal doing that podcast because I was just going in with my usual shtick, and I don't remember who it was, but the homeboy pulled the brakes on the whole thing. It's like, whoa, 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 watch your language. I'm like, well, wait a minute. Why?
I've told you about that guy already.
Oh, I know.
I think I've mentioned a little bit of him when we did a recording 6 months ago.
I guess what gets me hung up about it was his excuse was, well, my kids are in the room, they can hear. And I thought, well, are you doing this over speaker? How can they hear?
Are
you wearing headphones? Well, yeah, I'm wearing headphones. Like, they shouldn't be able to hear.
They should work.
Yeah. It's like, that is the whole purpose of headphones. You're doing it wrong.
What if he just had them inverted outside and everything? And it's like, well, I don't know how to run the volume, but if I turn them out, they tone down.
No, I want to give him the benefit of the doubt. He's trying to do it like the cool DJ thing where he's just like holding up one piece up to his ear. Yeah, one over the ear by hand. He's got some turntables in front of him while he's mixing.
Or working on a programming or whatever he was doing.
Yeah.
I know.
You won't have to worry about him appearing on our podcast anytime soon.
Yes.
Yeah, Sean kind of knows the story on that, or whatever I tell him that whenever I see him in Animazement.
Not to pick at your scabs, Dustin.
Well, my scabs are fully healed. Like, there's nothing to pick at. I mean, they've fallen off a long time ago, and they're just like, oh, that's a reminder. So,
so I'm free to swear this time around?
Yeah, because I don't do any censorship.
Thank God, because shit, piss, fuck, cunt, cocks of the motherfucker, and tits.
All right, maybe I might have to edit that down. No, I'm kidding.
Do you have an explicit tag on iTunes?
No, we don't. I figured we would by now.
Nah. I think that's a thing you have to opt into yourself.
I'm not even worried about it.
Unless someone flags you, which, I don't know.
We don't have anyone to flag us.
Exactly. That's why I haven't bothered. No one's really flagged us, but then I assume that's just because no one's listening to mine.
I listen, but I just don't care to go on iTunes and complain, because I don't complain.
Thank you, Dustin. You're keeping freedom free.
Yeah. Freedom of speech. It's my American right. Yep.